Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm smoking a Romeo and Juliet Cuban. The good friend of mine gifted to me, Polly, who sent me this amazing cigar case he invented all by himself. It was truly a super shock. I'll put some photographs in here at the beginning to kick this episode off. I was totally blown away. It was awesome. It's funny because when he sends me pictures of his world, I swear to God, he's in my backyard, minus maybe a couple palm trees. He skateboards, plays bass, he's in a band. He could transplant here in 2 seconds. So today's episode is going to be a little weird for some of you, probably most of you. But for some of you, a handful of you, and you might even find this video as the very first video you've ever seen of Deep Thoughts, just because of its name. And what's going to be funny about it is there's going to be people who are going to watch this episode or see this episode on YouTube and go, what? What the hell is this about? And there's some of you that are going to see this name and go, oh my God, really? And you're going to click in and you're going to find out it's about what you're experiencing and you're going to go, this is crazy. I thought I was the only one. I'm calling this episode The Ghost Cat because as I understand it, this is what it's called online. What is the Ghost Cat? For those of you who are like, what are you talking about? Allow me. Such a good steak. Some of you have experienced this event in your life, and it's not always necessarily a cat type situation. But there, I will tell you why I think that most of us, in at least one scenario, believe it's cat-like. You are going to sleep. Or perhaps you are rolling around in bed, you were asleep, and now you need to do that, you know, left side, right side switch. This event occurs when an individual is in the twilight zone between full consciousness and dream state. It could be assisted by a little bit of tipsiness if you've been drinking just a little bit. I'm going to share a whole different experience with that. But most of the time, it's completely sober because I am a person that barely ever drinks, and I've had this numerous times. But one is lying down in bed. Now, if you're like most people, you lay down in bed, and it's usually when you're by yourself. For whatever reason, even if you sleep with someone else, this used to happen to a girlfriend of mine, I tuck her into bed, and I still had to do something else, and it would happen, or she will have gotten out of bed and I was in there by myself, or sometimes just when you're by yourself sleeping, this occurs. But you're laying down on one side of the bed, and so you have the other half of the bed that is unoccupied. Now, how does getting in bed work? I mean, you know, in terms of laying down, you've got your pillow that you're sleeping on. Maybe you hug a pillow to your gut just to kind of keep your leg and your spine all together, right? Highly recommend that. But what will end up happening is up in the, usually the head region of the other half of the bed, as you have your eyes closed, you will feel in the bed depressions in the pillow next to you, in the cloth next to you, in the mattress next to you. And sometimes if you're actually sort of reaching your arms out as you're in your side position, you might be touching the pillow with your hands, you'll get this inside the pillow. Other times, it'll just happen that it's the comforter that you're on. You will distinctly feel, and this is most important when you have no pets, like me. I don't have any pets, right? I'm allergic to cats like crazy. But you will feel little tiny paws in your mind's eye. It's the same sort of thing, because I've had cats before, right? And cats will crawl up on the bed very carefully. You know, after they jump on, you know, you get that boom, and then they want to be careful, right? They want to kind of get up next to you, or they're trying to find a place to sleep in the same bed with you. Some in the morning will come and lick your nose or whatever. This is prior to that licking part. But they'll come up, and they'll start kind of coming close to you. And this happens. And what's really strange is, you know, if someone came up to you, you know, someone you're dating comes up to you the next morning, I had this weird thing that happened to me. It felt like a cat was crawling on the pillow towards me or on the mattress towards me. You might, if you've never had the experience, go, oh, that's really weird. But it happened in my house. it happened to both myself and my girlfriend. And sometimes, just for convenience sake, we'd sleep in, I have three rooms, so I'd sleep in another room where I was working. I'd just crash out. And I would have it in that room, and she would have it in her room. And neither one of us, she is a person who is very, you know, doesn't know really what she believes in, not quite sure God exists, not quite sure heaven exists, doesn't have any ghost stories. I mean, like the complete opposite of the ghost story thing. I mean, she would consider it to be very embarrassing to ever tell a story about that sort of thing. And has no history of it. So I've had her isolated and talked to her, and you never had anything happen. Like, no. She was there when I did the Walt Disney thing. So that's an interesting one. But this had been going on, you know, probably since my 20s. I could definitely say, I can't remember if I had it before my 20s. I honestly can't remember. But definitely in my 20s, this will happen every, you know, few years. And it seems like when it starts to occur, it starts to occur more often. And, you know, I was looking this up the other day, and there are stories about this. They call it the ghost cat. It's funny. So I wanted to bring that one up and then bring up some other things that have happened in my house. And if those of you have seen absolutely every episode, you will have heard about some of these other things. But I want to mention all the case studies that have happened to me personally or to my girlfriend personally, such that, you know, I mean, she doesn't live here anymore, but when she did live and we were together, these are the things that occurred. So in fact, I was here late one night by myself, and I was going to have the whole night to myself, and I was out with some friends, and I I don't have to drink that much before I get just a little bit tipsy, so I can be totally legal, you know, to drive, and I'm feeling like, I feel fine, and then when I lay down, you get that little bit of wishiness, right? So I want to admit that, because that's a rare addition to me in my life. But I get in bed, and it's summertime. It's June. I think it's 2015. And it was a warm summer, unlike this summer. Although it's not too bad right now. But I lie down, and I do that whole thing where it's too hot to put the sheets on, right? Completely on. So you want some sort of like, I don't know, womanish feeling. So you put the sheets on you a little bit, but you kind of let your butt hang out or your back hang out to kind of radiate the heat. And this is what had happened. I'd lied down, and boy, I was like falling asleep really, really quickly, and which is very rare for me because my mind's always waking up the second I put my head down. But I lay down, and I felt, because there's probably about 6 inches between my back and the edge of the bed, and someone right around my butt, the mattress literally goes down, like someone is sitting behind me on the mattress. And it was one of these situations where, you know, you might, I don't know how one hallucinates a deformity in the mattress, because there's physics that end up taking over. Like, for instance, if a pillow has these depressions from the cat paw like rhythm and movement, right? It's a four-legged thing. You actually sense the four things. And if you've owned a cat, which I have till I got allergic to them, you know what that's like. But this was so depressed on the bed that I felt my body sliding backwards. And I wouldn't say it was a man. I would say it was like a petite woman kind of feeling. And, you know, it's funny because in a split second, you start to wonder, okay, I've definitely had, you know, girlfriends that had keys to the house, to someone trying to surprise me with a really bad idea. But I remember, you know, it also took on the notion of maybe it was someone's knee on the mattress. And so you think, well, God, is someone trying to reach over my body, right? And so I remember like just being just shaken, you know, just, oh my God. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people report having sleep paralysis where you can't move. And I'm going to get into that because I don't ever have the sleep paralysis with the cat, the ghost cat. And I didn't have sleep paralysis with this thing behind me because I immediately flipped over and I was like, oh my God, you know. And I don't know if you can tell, but I'm not a real excited person. I mean, I'm not a guy who's like all wound up and jittery. I've got people like that in my family that are just ready to pop every 2 seconds, right? I'm quite the opposite. So for me to be startled, it takes quite a bit. But this got me. You know, I was rolling, no one was there, of course. And that was the last big one I think I've ever experienced. But there was, so when I was living with my girlfriend who was having this routinely happen to her, the interesting thing is it was like she carried it with her. Except in this particular case, she had moved out of the house like a month before and I was there by myself. And again, it was the last time I really had it. But she would have it and then I would have it. And you have to be by yourself. This never happens when you're with somebody else. But now I have had several times in my lifetime, and I mean probably half a dozen very vivid ones, and I've talked about this a little bit, where I will wake up in a sleep paralysis feeling. And again, there's supposed to be this chemical that secretes in your body to make you have paralysis. Otherwise, if you were walking in your dream, you'd be walking in your bed, you know. And so it's probably very good that that actually occurs. And, you know, evolutionists try to insinuate that we were monkeys in trees and that monkeys have this happen so that they don't wake up or fall out of a tree if they're sleeping in a tree. Any animal living in a tree needs to be very careful how they sleep and how they wake up, right? It's a decent theory. But I would wake up and there's two factors that happen. There's probably more than that, but the main one is I can't open my eyes and I get this sense of a being over me, pretty much like a adult male, geared body, you know, 5'10", 6 foot, somewhere in there. But I also get this sense that it is very alien. And I don't say that to make the story sexy. I don't know why I feel that way, but I have never once felt like, oh, it's just a dude in the room. You know, that has a whole different connotation, a guy in the room, because what would a human being, you know, be in the room? Is it some spy looking at you? I mean, why would they do that? It doesn't make any sense. I just like to watch you sleep. I'm a creepy spy, right? So, you know, I've had the dream. I've had the dream, you know, several times. I put this all but one goes like this. I wake up, and no matter what side I'm on, the creature is standing next to the bed, the edge of the bed. So usually, I guess, is when I'm facing away from the edge of the bed. That's very interesting. I just realized that right now. And so they're over me, and I feel like I'm misinterpreting the paralysis as them holding me down. That was the way it went for at least 3 times. I felt like in my brain they must be holding me down, but I never felt any hands on me, that sort of thing. And then later I realized it was just, I'm paralyzed. And so in that case, you know, like I told you with nightmares I used to have as a kid, I just won't put up with it. And so anything that's trying to constrain me, mess with me, I flip the other way. And I just say, well, I'd rather kill you than deal with this bullshit, you know. And so I would try to strong arm my body. You know, I'm trying to strong arm myself awake. And I think in a couple cases, it was just me rolling over very, very slowly and then opening my eyes and figuring out nothing's there. And it's usually like broad daylight or early morning. I don't think I've ever had this in a pitch black night. God, this stick is gold. Unbelievable. I'm just going to narrate as I go along. Well, eventually I started realizing that no one was holding me down. And part of it was I get this sense of fear at first. It's not a really acute, oh my God, I need to, you know, run away. It's more like, who's doing this? I just want to know who's doing it. and to get it to stop. The last time I had that particular thing happen to me, it was probably about 10, 11 in the morning. I had been working all night and I went to bed and I woke up and this was on me. And that particular night, I had moved a firearm into the room with me. So it was always available because I was not in my normal room where I have other options of similar caliber. And so in my mind, I am thinking, okay, now I'm being held down and I'm going to blow this motherfucker away is what I'm thinking. And so in my dream, thank God it was just a dream, right? This did change me a little bit when I woke up. In my dream, I have armed myself and I am turning over and it's like I'm in, it's not even just water. I am in utter slow motion and I am trying to just get this barrel pointed and trying to figure out what I'm going to be lining up with. Of course, I would never just randomly pull a trigger, but I'm looking over and I finally wake up. And I realize I haven't moved at all. I have no weapon in my hand whatsoever. And in all honesty, it wasn't really in my hand because that has a whole separate feeling, weight, and it's cold. And, you know, it's a very serious engagement. You know, I'm not a guy who ever thinks about my weapon when I'm having a dispute with somebody or anything like that. It's strictly for the one in a million situation, right? Like you got an earthquake and there's looting going everywhere and you're trying to protect your stuff. You might sidearm up during that until the police can get to your area, military gets to secure the whole situation. So I wake up and I realize two things. One, I don't have a gun. Two, it finally dawned on me in the middle of the situation, and I don't know why I'm gonna throw a little romantic suggestion to you in the middle of the situation. Suddenly, as this keeps occurring to me, suddenly it occurs to me that this is not an enemy at all. Whatever this thing is, it's just there. It's just there and it's looking at me. Which is interesting because if you think about yourself making it up in your mind, which is a really strange thing, which is what I want to get into in this episode even deeper. But if you're just making it up, why would you make it necessarily a threat? The only thing I could think of is this is something that you would that would only occur in real life by someone who's probably not wishing you the best of luck. You know, now, if you're a little kid and you got a fever or you're sick and you're an adult and people might come in and check up on you, but people usually don't just walk in and look at you. You know, they'll, if you're sick, they'll tuck you in a little bit more. They might check your forehead, change your compress, whatever, ask you a question, see if you're asleep, whatever, right? It's not going to be some creeper standing on the edge of your bed. So at that point, and this is what's sad, is that I now have looked forward to that moment happening again because the idea is don't be aggressive, don't be afraid. And if you can get those two emotions not to occur, if you can be a logical, thinking, scientific person, then maybe I can get to the next level with this being and actually communicate, identify. I know it seems strange to take such a thing and actually commit it to reality, but I want to ask you, what would be the logic, the scientific logic of thousands of human beings around the world having a ghost cat experience? What sense does that make? I'm not even a cat person anymore. I mean, I don't dislike cats or anything. I got one in my neighborhood that belongs to everybody, and I think he's great when he comes around. But, you know, I'm not sitting at home wishing I had a cat. I'm not someone who goes, oh gosh, you know, when I was a kid, I had nothing at all. Strange. So let's go back to the time. Her and I are living together. And this is around the time I had my thing with the alien. The only time I was totally living by myself was the last one I really had with the knee feeling or something behind my backside. Okay. But we're living together and this is starting to occur fairly frequently. I mean, we're talking once a month for each one of us, either the cat or this other hovering thing. And I am working in my spare bedroom, I got headset on. And I know a lot of you work with headsets a lot. That's the way you roll. I used to do that a lot in the 90s. I haven't really worked like that in a long time. So this was sort of like new for me to put these headsets on. And my girlfriend at the time was really sensitive to music, you know, any sounds at night. So if I put those up too loud in a totally separate room, she would come in and go, could you turn those down? So I'm chilling out. I don't have them up too loud. I'm looking at my computer and I'm hearing something strange. And I, you know, it's one of those moments you go, whoa, that was weird. That wasn't part of my music. My volume's turned up. Is my volume turned up on my computer? So I pull them off real quick. I free up an ear. For the very first time in my life, I hear a woman scream in my house. And it was sort of not like a, you know, terror scream like you might see in a movie, but some sort of like bizarre, you know, yell. And now I'm just going into like guardian mode. And so I like pop up and I go in the bedroom and she is like all alone, pulling herself out of the bed. Kind of like groggy eyed, you know. And I said, what's going on? What's going on? And she's like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, she's so not this kind of person. I mean, at all, right? And she goes, so there was someone at the edge of the bed, at the end of the bed. And she said it looked like someone in silhouette. And I said, what did it look like? She goes, well, she goes, it was either Thor or it was you. Because you have the same whole build. And I was working out like crazy at the time, which is kind of funny. But she goes, it was this long, you know, short, long hair, just like my hair is right now. And it just freaked her out huge. And so, you know, this is, again, this will repeat one episode way, way back, probably in season 3. But I made, so that's this story gets embedded in my mind. So a couple of years later, 2016, at least a year and a half later, I had met someone online and we had become friends. And she was in Ireland. She is in Ireland. And she was telling me that a bunch of stuff about this sort of thing. But hers was more intense. And, you know, I can't really vouch for whether or not this person is likely to tell this kind of story. But this one's pretty fascinating. And I didn't get the sense this person's trying to impress me in any way, shape, or form. Or, you know, just wasn't a big tall tale kind of personality. You can tell those kind of personalities because they're always like, and then, and they always have a story. And there's always a million of these things. And then they go off on other, you know, tangents and other rabbit holes that are very similar to the paranormal. Nothing wrong with that. But this person wasn't that kind of person at all. Very stable-minded individual, very intelligent. But she said that when she was younger, and I don't know what age, but considerably younger than what she was, I think she's about 30 or so, she told me that her and her mother were sitting on the bed, and her father had passed already. And she said that, like, she's looking at her phone and her mom's looking at an iPad or something like that. They're busy, but they're together, lights on in the room. And that they both looked up at the end of the bed in the broad daylight. Or not broad daylight, but nightstand kind of light. And said that there was a guy standing there. And they both shrieked and they both froze. Because they're like, where the hell did this guy come from? What's he going to do? And they were both seeing the same individual. And then in some change of events, some movement in their bodies, the guy disappears. Then they immediately compare notes. What did you see? What did the guy look like? Brown hair, blue eyes, whatever the guy looked like. I don't know what he looked like. I can't remember what she said. But she goes, I swear to you, my mom and I both saw this dude at the end of the bed. Now, the end of the bed thing is all over the web as well. People have had this experience. But the interesting thing about this girl is that she works at a hospice place, or at least did at the time I knew her. And she mentioned that all kinds of interesting things happen at a hospice. And for me, just being a script writer, it just was awesome, you know, fodder for the mind and events and just cool things. But she said that she goes, what I'm about to tell you is, I mean, I'm paraphrasing what she said, but she says, what I'm about to tell you is going to sound really nuts. And it's going to sound like I'm one of those people, but she have, you know, I could tell she wasn't one of those kind of folks. But she said, look, this stuff happens so often in my job that it's no big deal to us anymore. But it's always a huge deal, and it's very shocking when you first start at the hospital. And so I'm like, okay, I'm listening. So she had a few things. She said, one, there's a weird thing when someone passes away in a room. Because they're always, you know, about a 50-50 chance that anyone's in there is going to pass away. They're all in hospice, so they're all on the edge of their life anyway, that this would happen when someone's in the room. And sometimes we know someone is, you know, having heavy breathing, and this is it. And so they'll hold their hands and talk to them and stuff. I mean, these people are amazing people. I mean, I hope there's a special place in the afterlife for these people. But quite frankly, I think it's quite possible that they're amazing souls get this extra view simply because they are amazing souls. I completely can believe that. But she says when someone passes away in a room, the room starts to smell of like a very clean plastic. She likened it to some of the garbage bags that they use, you know, when you whip out a garbage bag and you start putting air in it so you can get inside your trash can. She said it's kind of like the smell of some of the trash bags we have. It's very pleasant. And she goes, you know, it's not part of their bodily function or anything like that. It's just this weird thing that occurs. Second thing, she says that it's happened to virtually everyone who's worked there 5 to 10 years, somewhere in that range. She said that on more than one occasion, a person will pass away and the hospice worker, who's obviously still alive, will notice that the room fills up with, I guess you could say, spirits. And it seems like it's their family coming to usher them to the next realm of life. But it does take on a humanoid sort of impression in the world, which is very interesting. The Mormons will be very happy. I think most people believe you get to the other side and you have a body because we can't think of being outside of our body, but the Mormons really throw down on that whole concept, which is fine. But the third thing she mentioned, I think, is a little, well, it's very interesting and it correlates with a lot of the ghost stories we've heard over the years, which is that she said that this next thing I'm going to tell you happens usually only to the rookies, the people that come in fresh. There goes the sprinklers. But she said that a lot of us, you know, we have to go on breaks here and there throughout the day. And usually, you know, if you take care of all the chores, then there's always just a natural break period. But during breaks, the longtime workers will be in the break room. And some, you know, rookie will be out there handling folks. And she said that as the core example was a real situation where this girl came in the room and said, someone asked her where she was. And she said, oh, I was just helping Mrs. So-and-so down the hallway into her room. And they're like, they look at each other like, oh, it happened again. And what had taken place was they said, well, who was it again? And she names a name. Now, what's interesting is the person who had escorted this woman to her room, a patient, was so new that she didn't know that that woman had died at least a week before the event occurred. And so the person, I guess, showed back up and repeated a little event. And I know that sounds crazy. I know that sounds nuts. But think about the fact that when you see a movie, outside of like a Marvel film where everything is just time travel and crazy things that could never happen in the real world, you know, a guy picking up a building. But anything that has any soul to it in a story, any book you've ever read, it's usually based on a bunch of micro events and from people's lives that are all been stitched together. And of course, we accentuate and you know, turn it up to 11, even though it may have only been 3 for the person who experienced it. But how many ghost stories do you have or that you've heard where a person who was passed, you know, the hitchhiker story, the guy's a hitchhiker, gets in the truck, and sometimes it's just point A to point B, and then the trucker goes in and says, I picked up this really great guy, he was really great, and they eventually say the name, and everybody at the diner looks at each other, and they go, yeah, well, he died, you know, 5 years ago on that highway, right there where you picked him up. Then there's the story where the person, there's a little added extra thing to it, where the person says, be careful right there. And because the person said, be careful, the person driving did something different, and they realized if they hadn't done something different, they were going to die. That something happened. There's black ice or ridges out or whatever. And so there's a life-saving experience that it's like a guardian angel. The person passed from the bridge falling out or because of black ice or because of something, and they want to protect everyone from the same demise that they had. So they're going to sit and try to do what they can for those that can see them. Maybe there's some requirement for human beings to see them. Maybe an open mind. Who knows, right? Now, you know, from all the dream episodes I've done, we definitely talked about this thing that can happen. And again, I haven't drawn out any comments from anyone to agree with this experience, but there's at least a couple comments back on one of the dream episodes of someone who actually had this experience. But the experience is that when you go to sleep and you're in the twilight zone phase, meaning between consciousness and full sleep stage, it's an amazing place to be, and everyone does it every single night. Now, those of you who fall asleep extremely fast, it's almost like you're falling through this layer so quick you don't recognize it. But for those of us who take a little while longer to get to bed, you're in this little fantasy land. You know, you can see things. You can just imagine things and see things. And again, it's phenomenal how your brain can render anything in full 3D, 4K, all the shadows in the right place, light sources in the right place. You can imagine a spaceship that you've never seen before in 2 seconds, and it's correct. It's a really strange thing. It's a powerful thing that we have. It's creationism. You're just in that mezzanine where it probably is literally the conduit between where our souls live and where we live inside of our bodies, you know. But you can imagine a whole history in a split second that has never occurred, but you will feel as if in that split second that not only is that a history real, meaning it's in the past, but you'll feel like you're a part of it. And a lot of times you'll psych yourself out. I haven't had this happen in a while, but I used to have this thing when I was younger that I would not only dream out of a history real quick, but it would be, I have forgotten something. Like I told someone I would do something and I didn't do it. And then that accountability bubble hits me and I'm like, oh my God. And then I find out, oh, that's fake. I've never been with that person. I don't have any commitments. And then you're like, oh, this relief. So the common denominator of the ghost cat and all these sorts of impressions, and I'm going to get to a whole nother ghost thing that I've shared only one time before after this, but it's always in for me, and I've interviewed, you know, my girlfriend several times on this, like when she had this experience when she used to live here. Were you in the twilight zone phase? And the answer is always yes. And so when you're waking up, you're coming back up through the apparatus. So when I would have the person on top of me, you know, or looking at me or something, and I, you know, sometimes I get the sense they were actually reaching out and sort of touching me a little bit, but it wasn't that I felt them touching me exactly. It just was that they were recently touching me when I woke up. But it is in that phase. So the question is if this were to have any validity of reality, that you could have, if this is a Star Trek episode, this would be perfect, right? They've had several dream episodes where people are hiding in this other dimension, messing with all the people on the Enterprise or on the, whether was it the Voyager Enterprise. I recently rewatched the Next Generation episode that had this, because there's two. One of them is a Next Generation episode where, you know, I think Worf's arm had been cut off and reattached. And about three or four people on the Enterprise had these weird moments, and they couldn't sleep very well. But they heard this clicking noise and this clattering noise, so they all went to the holodeck and started piecing together that they remembered a table that was there, and they started designing the table together. Geordi was there, and I think Troy was there, and Riker was there, and Worf was there. And they eventually talked about an arm with a little, like a razor on it and all this other stuff. And they found that they were being observed by a alien culture that was hiding in another, hiding with stealth equipment on. Then I believe it's Voyager that has the one where they were actually walking around wearing mechanical apparatus that were actually embedded into their skull. But they couldn't see it, but everyone was having headaches. And, you know, oh my God, this is the worst headache ever. And that was a very similar copycat episode, which was great. Okay. So this ghost cat thing is happening to my girlfriend and I for a long time. And it's only with her. That's the other weird thing. No one's ever said they had this that I've ever known personally. So if you've had this, I would love to hear your stories, honestly. But the other one was that we, through an acquaintance, she had met a woman that had gone to Paris to live for business. She was from America. She goes to Paris to live. And she had rented this beautiful apartment. And if you've ever seen some of the apartments in Paris, it's unbelievable what it'll cost, like $1,000 a month. It's like a 15 by 15 room. I mean, it is hideous, some of this crap. I mean, they look okay, but I mean, geez. If you're an art student, I get it. But if you're a professional or you actually live there, it's just insanity. This was a normal multi-bedroom flat. But the woman goes over there, and she's a professional. I can't remember exactly what she did, but we're talking CEO-level, high IQ woman who is very by the book, very Martha Stewart, and personality, as I had it described to me. So not a person who's into paranormal, not a person that would waste their life really having anything to do with recreation in general, let alone telling tall tales, to then lose the status of discerning, brilliant CEO, right? Because you could be cast as a nut and lose your job if you told these kind of stories. But this woman told my girlfriend this story. But she tells the story of unpacking her stuff. She just got there. She's got her luggage. She doesn't have her stuff shipped in from the United States just yet. But she has several suitcases that she brought. And so she's kind of unloading the first, you know, couple weeks worth of suits and that kind of thing, right? And by the way, I've had a request to film the possum, but that is very difficult because this is on a tripod and it's pointing down, so I won't disturb the show for that, but at some point I will get that shot for you guys. She's over there walking right now. But she said that she was unpacking her stuff, putting her stuff away. It's broad daylight, and she turns around, and on the mattress is the imprint of what appeared to be a female butt on this mattress. And she is literally terrified. She's not screaming or anything, but she's terrified of what the hell's going on. Like, looking at it, it's not going away, and it's there. I believe the story is that she immediately left the apartment and went and got some food or something. I think it was early evening or something like that, but it's still bright out. So she continues to try to live there. She's got to live there because she set this whole thing up. But she said there were... the mattress thing was huge. And she eventually gets so freaked out and so tired of dealing with this randomness that she sells the place or gets out of it. I think she bought the place because the second half of the story was that she was at some other event about a year later and ended up talking to some guy, and come to find out the dude actually bought her place after she bought it. She didn't know who bought it. She just bought it. You know, there's some guy bought it. She put it on the market or whatever. And she said, "You live in that place? I used to live there. Why don't you live there anymore?" Because he was talking about how he got out of this crazy place. And he goes, I quote, "Because it's fucking haunted." And she was like, "Right?" He didn't elaborate on anything, as I understand it, but he was like, in fact, the way the story was told is that after admitting that, he walked away from her at the party and was like, I'm not even talking about this. Like, he was way more freaked out, which is hilarious, ladies, right? She was more capable of dealing with it than him. So you hear these stories from people that are credible, people who have everything to lose by mentioning sorts of things, these sorts of things, right? And the thing is I'm not going to go into the stories again, but go see my episode on, Ghosts and Demons. I think that's way back in season one. This is a new channel. Just go to deepthoughtsradio.com and you'll find it there. So normally, you know, if I didn't have these experiences myself, and then especially sharing it with another human being in the same house, you know, I mean, like, first you think about, well, maybe a cat died and the cat's still chilling out at your house. It's like, I don't know. It almost freaks me out a little bit. I mean, not really freak me out, but it's kind of like, what would be the logic in hanging out on Earth? Especially hanging out in the same house. You know, there's the Beetlejuice movie where, you know, the family doesn't want to leave the house because they died young in the house. And so they're like, we didn't get our dreams, but they don't want else to live in the house. And so they're summoning Beetlejuice to scare the people out of the house. And so they end up at the end of the movie reconciling with the family that bought the place, and then they have the place to themselves. So there's that whole thing. But when you, because I went my whole life, let's put it this way, I was in my mid-30s, I would say, before I had the experience of my grandmother having passed either that morning or the previous night. I wake up, it's about 12 o'clock, somewhere 11, 12 o'clock or something like that. It's broad daylight. My girlfriend's already gotten out of the bed. She's in the kitchen messing around. And my grandmother's hovering over my bed in like a white gown. It's kind of flowing like a Spielberg water effect thing. And she just said, you know, she said, I just want you to know I'm on the other side and I'm okay. And I just talked to someone the other day that had someone who passed in their life telling them that their relative came to them after death and said, something, 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 and I'm okay. Isn't that interesting? And I was like, wow, you haven't even heard my side of the story, you know, my version of that. So I got two stories in the last 2 weeks where mine and hers matched up. And then there's for the Deep Thoughts listeners. So if you're brand new, you're going to have to go watch another episode because I cannot torture the listeners one more time with this story. But there was an event. I swear on anyone's grave that I find sacred. And it was witnessed by four different people, me being one of them, I guess three other people. Where I went to Disneyland, Walt Disney walks up to me, tells me where to find one of the oldest surviving Imagineer, which I had met 2 weeks earlier. I walked straight to the guy at a weird part in the park. He was there. I shook his hand. We talked. And it's a very real situation. And then I talked to a bunch of my other friends that work at Disney for 7 years. And they're like, oh yeah, the dude still lives there, man. He's all over the place. He protects people. And they said, you know, one I may not have told quite as clearly, but one of the biggest problems for people that work there for a long period of time is that security is always chasing reports of kids playing and having fun, especially on Tom Sawyer's Island, where it's, you have to get to it first and then you have to look around, because they can't have kids messing around, you know, where they're not supposed to be. And there's a big show that goes on with fire and a bunch of other stuff about 9 o'clock. It's 8:30 or 9. And so they can't have kids running around. They got to clear the place out, but they have heat sensing cameras now. They've got movement cameras, and none of these devices are firing off, but these security people have to follow up just in case something happens, right? But they say they never find these kids. One of the guys I talked to is one of the most mild-mannered guys I've ever met in my life. He doesn't strike me as the guy to have the imagination to make up the story that he said. No slight on him. He's just not that kind of guy. But he told me that he was working on the steamboat, and he goes, he's with several of the security people. They're spread out all over the place. But two of them are on the boat, and they said they heard a voice that sounds just like the recordings of Walt say, you boys better get back because the boiler's going to blow. And they're both like, you know, they're it's a weird in your ear kind of thing. Like someone's like right there, but they're on a boat. So where the hell's that going to take place? Right. Some guy swims up and says it and then gets back into water. But my buddy said, he goes, I looked at my friend and I said, did you hear that? And he says, the only thing my friend said back was, or says, we better get back. And they both walked away, and then boom, the boiler blows up on the steamboat and took 6 months to fix. So I don't know if this ghost cat thing has anything to do with true ghosts or if it's some other anomaly, but it's a weird thing that there's a commonality among people. And hell, if it weren't for the internet, we would never find each other, right? And the other strange thing about the ghost cat thing, just to keep going a little bit here, is that it comes up by your head. And I, you know, the more I think about it, you know, it's funny when you think about something that you usually just gloss over, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, the ghost cat thing happens, and you go on thinking about your day. As I'm sitting here lamenting, pontificating about this, it does strike me that there probably is at least one or two circumstances where it may have happened lower in the bed. But I'm telling you, 80% of the time at least, it's up by your head. And it's just a really strange thing that it would be by your head. Now, the other thing is that the thing that happened behind me was so not by my head, right? The people at the end of the bed, well, that's not by your head. So if it's some proximity issue due to neural toxins that are swimming around in your head, maybe you drink or you're so tired that your brain is starting to kind of cross wires and, you know, you're going to sleep world, right? You're disengaging from your mortal coil and potentially crossing over into dreamland. It's extremely interesting that that seems to be a commonality. By the way, I'm supposed to say this. I hate starting an episode like this because it's just the most annoying thing to hear at the beginning of an episode. If you think you're subscribed to this channel, make sure you're still subscribed, because you might get it off Facebook or Twitter or the website and you don't even realize you're not subscribed anymore. And if you do want notifications, I don't typically click the bell, just to be honest. If you dig notifications the second something happens, make sure that bell is clicked. I'm getting a significant amount of reports for the last year and a half since shadow banning started that people are being unsubscribed by the dozens, and the bell's obviously being unchecked very easily. And just before we go back to the episode, I have absolutely positively tracked the fact that YouTube is stealing view counts. And case in point is my most popular episode, as far as they're willing to admit, is episode 165 from season 2, which is my second moon hoax episode. It's linked to on a bunch of web pages out there. And it just blows me away that that's the case, because I don't do anything to promote. But that video 2 years ago was probably around 28,500 views 2 years ago. So I was always excited, you know, when you hit a new milestone, when it's 30,000. It's finally gone over 30,000. But it gets pounded. It's my number one episode. But if I go on statistics or the analytics and I say lifetime analytics, give me my top viewed video, it'll tell me that video has just crawled barely over 30,000 in 2019. But when I switch it back to 28 days, which is the last month of viewing, that video has received 2,500 views in 28 days. We'll do a little bit of math on that, right? In 1 month, it gets viewed 2,500 times. But 2 years ago, had it even received 1,500 views between 2 years ago and today, it would have crossed 30,000 way back in 2017. So they are manipulating those votes. That video must have 60 to 70,000 views, 40 of which have been stolen. So when you see this channel, if you're passing it on to other people, say, this content freaks the deep state out. Let's just put it that way, right? All right, back to our episode. The subject of haunted houses, because it's sort of in the category of this whole thing, right? Haunting doesn't have to be evil as long as there's nothing bad happening to you and you don't perceive it as a threat. You don't perceive it as evil. But of course, if you have beings that are sort of in this weird almost reality, and you sense them in some way, shape, or form, it's frightening. It's the unknown, and the unknown is pure fear. If you really just do some basic math on it, right, for the consciousness of a man, mankind. I was told, I forgot who told me this particular story, but there's the act of burning sage. And the people who believe in this, and I have no opinion personally, I think sage smells awful. But maybe that's why it has the effect it has. Who knows, right? And if you think about ethereal winds and you think about frequencies of energy and burning and it transforming into all kinds of different energy speeds and species, then if there's any form of ethereal existence to the other side, that they have to manipulate it to be in my existence, right? The cat thing is physically happening. If the butt print is actually happening in Paris and you could film it, then it has to be manipulating our world. So sage might neutralize their access to this realm based on this theory. But the act of burning sage is something that I've seen it in, I know people who do it for a living. I know of people that do it for a living, not any friends of mine or acquaintances of mine. But you've seen it. I saw it on one show where this guy was a house flipper. He was a stager flipper guy. And he would do it. And he looked so atypical of being kind of a sage burner. He was like a really clean-cut gay guy. And for some reason that doesn't, you know, I'm always thinking some woman who's kind of a hippie kind of, you know, crystal kind of person. This guy had no visible attributes of being your typical person who believes in that, but he did. And he would hold a little prayer session and burn sage to clean the house. And so I see that and I'm like, I'm shocked. I'm like, wow, these people really take that seriously. I have no opinion. I mean, what could I say? But I heard a very impressive story. There was a very rich Arab sheik, an oil guy. You can only assume that he has inexhaustible amounts of money. But he bought this home, I believe in Malibu. And it was a gigantic 35,000 square foot plus home on the beach. And I saw a picture of it when the person was telling me the story. I can't remember exactly which person told me the story, but I was shocked that this actually crosses the Arab belief system. And it could be a modern thing that they've adapted to, or it could be something that Arabs believe. If you know about this belief in the Arab culture, please share what you know. I'm interested in anyone's take on this whole thing. But they have a guy that they use, and he's not American, but he's not Arab either, but they pay this guy to come in and burn sage in at least a month ahead of time, if not more, to clean the whole house out of all of the previous history, sort of like The Shining with the Overlook Hotel, right? As, you know, Scatman Crothers, who played that dude, was talking to the kid. He said, and I cannot shake this definition because I believe it makes a lot of sense with ethereal technology, ethereal understanding of the universe. But he says it's, he was trying to explain why the Overlook Hotel created all the images that the kid might be seeing. Because he says, I don't know what you're seeing, but if you're going to stay here with your parents through the winter, you're likely to see things. And I want you to understand what you're seeing. Because he says, he was asking the kid about his little imaginary friend. He says, well, does he show you things, you know? And he says, it's like pictures in a book, you know? And so he said, well, it's kind of like when someone burns toast. He says, I forgot how he put the phrase, but he said, you know, you clean up the toast and you throw it away and it's gone. But you can still smell the burned toast in the room for quite a while. And so what he was trying to say was events will have occurred in this hotel that were crazy, nutty. But you'll still see the echoes of these events until they burn completely off. Apparently, the Overlook Hotel was phenomenal at keeping the echoes from the past in the fictional story, The Shining. So this guy is hired to sage this house. big old house. Takes him a long time. You know, the more I think about the story, I think it was like a 6 month stay or something crazy. But the guy starts burning, and there was some death that had occurred in the house. I want to say it was like a murder or something had happened in the house. But this guy gets so freaked out, and I think within 45 days, he left. And he told the Arab who owned it, he said, "You were not to move in this house. You were to sell it immediately. This place is evil." And that's a very expensive problem to have, right? A 35,000 square foot house on the beach of Malibu. And again, I was shown pictures of it. This is how the story was told to me, because it was a girl was dealing with, she had her own gigantic house. I remember who told me, yeah. She had her own 35,000 square foot house before I met her. But, you know, that's going to cost, I don't know, $100 million, $50 million, somewhere in there. It's going to be really super expensive. And to short sell it really fast, you know, people are going to ask questions. But at least the guy was from another country. And so hopefully when he had to resell the place, he could just say, "I just decided not to move out of my home country," or something like that. Found a better deal. So hopefully he didn't lose all of his money. Not that he cares. But the idea of the haunted house is intriguing, isn't it? What would cause such a thing to occur? And I know there's a million programs that talk about this kind of thing and people who have put their whole life into it, like Dan Aykroyd, and it would probably talk for 5 hours with much more education than myself about the subject. But, you know, if you lived in a home your whole life, the majority of your life, and then you pass away in your home, you may be so accustomed and so attached to it that even though you're offered the freedom of going some other place in the universe and starting over, you may need more time. Who knows how much time you would need? Now, I think the facts are that the accusations of homes being haunted have a couple different attributes about them, just, you know, being a layman analyzing this. One, it typically is more associated with the older a building is. And there's so many hoaxes online that it's hard to point towards anything. I mean, I've seen, you know, around Halloween time, the news will actually chime in and give you a few haunted house stories, and they'll rush into a home and think, you know, I've even had, when I was a kid, I didn't realize I was being had, but they were creating fake haunted house things. They're moving candlesticks around. It was all fake. And it was just like tracking Santa Claus at Christmas time, right? On a radar. So that would seem to be consistent with the notion that a place that has had more people live in it would have more opportunities to have, one, something unfortunate does occur, someone passes away in a weird way, some people just could live there their whole life. If a house is 400 years old, well, you have several opportunities for someone to live a full life in that particular destination and then get attached to it. The funny question is what would happen if two families wanted to battle it out for a place, right? They're both dying in the location, and now they both want to live there. It'd be an interesting story, right? But you seldom ever hear about the condo that's 15 years old being haunted. Hasn't had enough life. Then there's the sort of other story arc idea that you'll hear about, but you don't really hear about this other idea except for in movies, unless you can tell me different, which is that you have hallowed ground. In Poltergeist, it was that they moved the tombstones of a cemetery, but didn't move the bodies. And then they built a giant track house community on it. And so, for whatever reason, the epicenter was over the house that the story's told on. It didn't seem like anyone else was having issues until the end of the movie. Which, you know, technically, if you were to take the theory of the movie, everyone would be having haunted house experiences. Then you have Indian burial grounds, which are very romantic because Native Americans were very Mother Earth, very bound to the earth, and they have very strict rules about what happens to you when you pass away and how your soul is either ready to go or not ready to go. I think that's fascinating. But the math on it would be fascinating to really study, which would be to say, if you were to take all of the homes where people died weird ways, and so you have, like, say you have a map and you have, like, little blue dots everywhere where something has tragically occurred in a particular location. And you could probably cross-reference a database. Someone commits suicide, someone is murdered, something like that. Maybe even a young child, someone who has a lot of life left, right? And then you overlay a second tier on top of that. Well, you have, where people have reported hauntings. And see if you have a one-to-one correlation with a blue dot and, let's say, a red dot. The red dot is a report of a haunting. Do you have homes that are reported as having hauntings that have no tragic past to them? Or maybe we even have a light qualification, which is maybe a purple dot, which is someone was simply just really old and had lived the majority, if not all of their life, at a particular location. It'd be a fascinating metric to see, right? One of those little VR maps, right? Or AR maps. When I was a young man, I used to toy with the notion of seeing ghosts, because I always wanted to see one, a real apparition. My eyes are wide open, I'm looking into a darkness, and I wanted to see something. And it's absolutely never taken place whatsoever. But I used to sit as a kid, probably even into my 20s from time to time, when I would remember to go through this ritual. Because, I won't lie, I definitely, speak in one direction towards individuals that I believe are capable of listening to me. Don't know if they're there. Never heard anyone talk back. But if they did, I'd probably freak out. But I would sit in my bedroom, I'd sit in my bed, and I'd stare at the wall, and lights are out. And so it's not completely black, but it's definitely dark as hell. And in my mind, scientifically, my thought was, well, I will invite anyone who's present. In fact, I resurrected this ritual after I saw Walt. I was like, dude, you're only 8 miles away. Come on over to my house. Let's chill out. But I would say, okay, if you can, anybody who wants to. And I usually say, well, like, God's permission. I don't want a bunch of demons in my room, if such things exist. But I'd say, okay, manipulate some light. Take my door, which is not completely closed, and close it, which would probably freak me out because of the sound and stuff. But I'd beg them to do anything. Move something, make a light, disturb ether to the point, does a photon wave, and so I can see it. It never happened. Never, ever happened. And you could think of a million reasons why that wouldn't happen, even if they could, but if ghosts were common to any degree, especially with us with cell phones and that kind of thing, security cameras. Now, again, there's a weird video sequence at Disneyland, which is, it's either the most elaborate hoax ever, or it's real, one or the other. It's two primary camera angles, but there was a, what had happened was, this is the way that it hit the net. So, the security centers have cameras all over any location that is being filmed, and so they'll have like several monitors with all the cameras, and it's supposed to be a security guy looking at the monitors. Well, right around the Haunted Mansion, which for those of you who may not have been to Disneyland, can't remember how Disney World is organized in this particular area, but it's, again, Disneyland is the only place that Walt Disney ever went to because all the other parks didn't exist. And even though he planned Disney World, it didn't get finished. It didn't even break ground until after his death. But there's a kind of a cobblestone road that goes right up to the mansion, and then you go backwards and there's a big line there. And the road's probably about, I'd say 70 or 80 feet, I think, as it winds up to the house. But on this first camera is this, all of a sudden you see a humanoid walking apparition walking out of the Haunted Mansion. You don't necessarily come out of the building, but you see about halfway down the walkway, you start seeing this humanoid character walking. And then there's a second camera, which is filming the New Orleans grounds and out over the water towards that steamboat that's always parked over there by Frontierland. It's kind of the joint where Adventureland and Frontierland hit each other by Tom Sawyer's Island. But this apparition continues to walk through the stone ground towards the water edge. Now, if you're thinking, well, maybe the camera's like one of those old 50s cameras where it's always apparitions if it moves too quick, this isn't in that era. These are in crystal clear camera era, right? And this thing is definitely an apparition of some sort. I mean, even if someone's creating the special effect, it was brilliantly done. But the second it steps out of one camera, it goes into the other camera. And there's a little bit of a pause because there's a space between the two cameras. But this character continues to walk, and then it walks through the little barrier that protects you from walking into the water, and then it walks out over the water towards the steamboat, and it sort of vanishes. And so, you know, if I were to watch that in any other scenario without my personal experience there, I'd say, you know, someone did some special effect, or, you know, maybe it's real, whatever. But now I'm like, holy crap. Maybe that's real, you know. But for any of you who've had an experience, especially for those of you who know you're not ghost storytelling people, it's a weird thing. I mean, it really changes your perspective. Even if you believed in a God and an afterlife or reincarnation or whatever you believed before, as much as you might be determined to believe that, seeing or experiencing something, totally changes the game. And, you know, I'll meet new people and tell them that story if the conversation goes there. We're having fun, you know. And I know that they're looking at me. If they haven't had that experience, they look at me and they're like, maybe he's nuts. You know, he's a little bit of nuts in him. Or maybe he's one of those guys that needs attention. And it's such a sad thing to see in the back of their eyes, because you're like, God, if you could just step into my consciousness and ride shotgun for even 5 seconds, you would know, one, I'm telling you the truth, but two, I'm not that kind of guy at all. I mean, if I don't know what it would take for me to be that kind of guy, or any of us to transform from not necessarily believing any of that stuff to being going around, oh, it's totally different, guys. Everybody, you got to hear this. Step around, you know. I guess it would be, you see dead people. I mean, you would see spirits all the time. And then I've experimented with the notion, because I write stories, that imagine here's the kind of scenario I've toyed with in my mind, which is someone, because if you watch, I think it's called Oh God, with John Denver and George Burns, where George Burns plays God. I think it's 1979, 78, somewhere in there. And he just shows up to John Denver, who's a total atheist in this movie. And he's telling him, you know, you got to do some stuff for me. And, you know, John Denver's like, seriously, you know, old man, get away from me. And he realizes no one can see him. I think he's at a shopping center. He's like at a grocery store or something. And no one can see the old guy. And he's like, you don't see that dude? And they're all like, are you okay? And he finally starts believing, right? And I think they did Oh God Part 2 as well. It created some wild movement. But it'd be fun to see that movie. That's where I took my first date when I was 9 years old. Derby, Kansas. But I toyed with the idea that it's because we would talk too much about it that they don't do this. But it also affirms your belief in the afterlife, and it also reveals, it would reveal, if you had like a George Burns experience with this full flesh and blood character, it's fully opaque and talking to you, it would change your entire ecosystem, how you view the universe, and then you would be privileged with part of the matrix, right? You know how this thing works. You know the thresholds, at least a lot more than you would prior to the experience. But say you have a hero of yours, someone could be your relative, could be someone who's famous you never met. You want to meet Nikola Tesla, and you go into your living room, and you're in this, let's say you're in a Tesla mode. You've filled your house with a lot of his paraphernalia or research or whatever, which is hard to do, right? But let's say you did that. And then you walk into your front room and he's sitting in one of your chairs and just sitting in his really cool, you know, like you always saw him in the pictures. And he's ready to talk to you. And so you have this giant conversation with him. Well, what would be two factors that would endanger the rest of the world that is not believing in this and thus maybe living in a more blissful nature because we're ignorant of these things? The debate is actually sort of healthy, right? Is there a God? I don't know. Is there an afterlife? I don't know. Do we reincarnate? I don't know. But if Tesla sat there in front of you and said, well, you know, I've had a long time to think about all the things I invented, and I'm going to give you an invention, or I'll answer any one of your questions about what I invented. And you're like, hey, did you invent time travel? You know, like all those secret little things about it. And you find out all the truth. And then you start a little blog site on him, and you're like, he didn't do this. He did that. This is what this really meant. Ba-da-da-da. And by the way, this is what was destroyed. This is what was found. This is what he's working on. This is what he named that pigeon or that dove he fell in love with in New York, and whatever. All the mysteries of the guy would be unraveled. Well, that would obviously be some temporal violation in history. But let's say that any one of us got that much proof that this is occurring. Would we incubate, and let's just say, let's run through the scenario, the second type of scenario. That occurs. Your hero is sitting in the chair, whoever that is. You have this big conversation, and they tell you, well, this is a one-time thing. In fact, I only got half an hour, so make it good. It takes a lot of energy to do this. I've only got permission to do this once, or whatever. Would we as human beings deduce something else about reality that we had never deduced before because we never had the proof? And would that manifest into some other key that could unlock something about this reality, the matrix, the door to the dome or whatever, that would be dangerous for the experiment that is humanity, that is this existence, this matrix or whatever we're in, you know? So with my experiences in this, and then my lack of experience of it ever reoccurring at any type of interval, right? Don't, you know, I've got a season pass now to Disneyland again because I created this thing called a Flex Pass, which is much more reasonably priced, and it's pretty cool. But you have to know when I go there, well, what do you think I'm thinking of? The entire time I'm there, I'm thinking, you know, Walt, come back up to me. Say something else. Let's have another experiment happen, right? That's what I'm thinking, off and on while I'm there. Isn't that wild? I've been permanently changed when I go there. When I sit at my house and I'll get these urges to go there. And I know that, you know, a lot of people think Walt was all this crazy stuff. I guarantee you he's probably clean as a whistle, but people got around him. And, you know, the more they got around him, that's really around the time he died. You know, Club 33 was being built the year that he died, okay? Wasn't even open yet, okay? But like I said, I go there and I look between all the sponsorships. I look at the places where he personally crafted buildings. He personally rode on rides. You know, if you go to the Peter Pan ride, there's photographs of him on every one of those seats, making sure that they were built perfectly. And, you know, they're the same seats, as I understand it. They feel like the same seats, trust me. And, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there as a sort of a like-minded experiment or experience. For those of you who remember the movie E.T. back in the day, and, you know, I don't think I've seen that movie all the way through since 1982, maybe 84 tops. In fact, probably 84. I was doing a bunch of paintings of E.T. back in the day when I was a kid. But the way the movie goes is that this little boy has this alien land in his backyard, hides in the shed, and they finally lure him out of the shed with Reese's Pieces, right? Until he gets into the house, and they make friends with the guy. And of course, they dress him up, they have all this fun, and then eventually the feds figured out where he was, they chase the kid, and then, I forgot what happens, but he dies, temporarily, E.T., he turns pure Snow White. And when they covered his house with all the hazmat stuff, right, and all these feds are walking around, these scientists are walking around, this fed dude shows up, and he goes into the tent where the E.T. body is being stored. And I think the kid is there looking at the dead E.T. And of course, we're all dying inside when we were kids that he died because it was the cutest little thing, right? He's kind of menacing in a weird monster-y kind of way. But what was the story for the Fed? The story for the Fed was that he, I think the insinuation was that he had met E.T. when he was a kid. And he has been involved with the extraterrestrial research for the government because he saw it as a kid and he gravitated towards that and got himself Q clearance, I guess. And he just wanted to see E.T. one more time. And so, of course, E.T. comes back to life and the kid pretends to be crying. It's one of the funniest scenes ever. And I think that's when they steal him and put him in the bicycle. I think it's when they fly through the moon. I think that's when that happens. But anyway, you know, let's say I live to be 80 to 100 years old. Let's say Disneyland continues and I somehow have access to this place. It doesn't matter how long I live. Every time I go there, I'll be thinking about that experience and how real it was for me and how I took my girlfriend, walked straight to this dude in the kiddie park area, which I never go to, and just exactly where the little pin in my head was, there's Bob Gurr standing there with his buddy. I talked to Bob 10 years later and he's like, yeah, I remember that day. This is crazy. He said, he's 85 when I'm talking to him. 10 years later, maybe even 86, I don't know. But he proceeds to tell me a bunch of other stories where people appeared out of the blue in his life and a bunch of other weird things happened to him at Disneyland. So you meet a like-minded person who's had the same experiences. My buddy was a security guy. He had his experiences. And so we're all able to live life. We're able to go on with our life. It doesn't paralyze you. You know, the government's tacked it, but they can't tell us about creatures from another planet, you know, beings from another planet, because we're all going to freak out. Well, you know, maybe get a little bit of post-Trump election crying, but people are going to be okay. It's interesting. So I think that's about all I have for that. I want to know your experiences. And if you tell me about your experience in the comment sections in YouTube, definitely tell me sort of what kind of person you are, you know, whether or not you've had billions of these experiences, or if it's like, man, I would never have believed in this, but this happened to me. And if you can make distinctions between your relatives versus maybe your heroes, like again, Walt's one of my heroes in terms of his tenacity to create the impossible. If you read his whole life story, It was a tough, tough road from the very beginning. I think he only really got a reprieve about the time he started the park, where money was so plentiful he could do what he wanted without begging bankers. But then the third category would be utter random things, random events. Anyone that you know that you, like I gave those examples, I will only ever give you examples for people that I believe are programmed to not believe in this sort of thing, because I think those are the most credible for my personality personally. So lament, wax poetic on this whole thing in the comments section, because I want to hear it. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It has all the feeds. There's two video. BitChute is about, This is early October. It's about to hit season 5. So very soon here, probably by the time this episode hits, season 5 will be 100% up to date on BitChute. So you can go either place to watch it. You get it in 4K on YouTube, so that's cool. Plus, any of you like to really leave comments that are seen by thousands of people, YouTube's still the best place to do it. But there's two options for audio. So if you're a podcast, you can get this in 2 seconds on the website. There's two social media. Twitter's just a place to find the feeds if that's where you tend to go. I'd recommend you get off Twitter because it's just nothing but total darkness. We have a locked Facebook group, which is really fun. We're starting to get some more member requests in, so it's cool. But this is where you can share all kinds of stuff. I mean, any belief system you have will be respected. You know, just don't be thin-skinned. But there's a couple ways to donate to the page. There's a PayPal link, which someone finally used. Thank you so much. And there is a Patreon page. So you can set up for a monthly little donation if you want. I forget to mention, too, the thing about Patreon is that the second I upload it from my computer, I put it on Patreon. I may actually change that policy just a little bit. I might let it fully encode before I let you have the link. That way, when you see my post, you can click on it and immediately plays. And that can be a few hours before I give it to the world, or it can be days before I give it to the world. So if you want to be on the inside, you can do it. And, you know, I'm there if you want to. It's a much smaller audience. So if any of you send me a message, and because I know you're donating to be there, I'm definitely going to give you some priority to answer any of your questions or reply to you guys. And it, by the way, if there's anything you guys want on Patreon that I'm not giving you, just let me know. I don't currently engage the tiers because I kind of have a love-hate situation with the tier idea that if you give me so much money, I'll do something really special for you. It makes sense. I just feel like that's a bit on the extortion side. So don't get mad at me. It's just I'm still trying to emotionally deal with how to really do that. But I would like to get to a donation level where, you know, we can do face-to-face chats and stuff and we can get to know each other a little bit better. You can ask me some questions. So if you have any thoughts about that, let me know what you'd be willing to part with to do something like that. There's an all-new remastered Season 1. Again, this channel does not have Season 1 published anymore. It's there in unlisted form, so people who have linked my videos all over the web for Season 1, they're still working. They're working just fine. Again, the reason why Season 1 was remastered, the number one reason was that I used music from my collection and my computer to intro the episodes, but I didn't realize that the record companies were going to steal all the revenue and have the videos blocked in other countries. So the main thing was not really the money. It was Germany won't allow, well, American companies won't allow Germans to see stuff with their revenue streams or whatever the stupid idea is. But the other thing too is that episodes like gun control were completely banned worldwide. So I posted that on BitChute, and it is one of the number one viewed videos on BitChute. In fact, I think it's my number one video on BitChute. In fact, it is right now, is gun control. So if you want to see some of the episodes uncensored, definitely go over to BitChute. So I'm going to loop back through and make sure. I don't think anything's been banned on the Season 1 because it's all proprietary music that they don't have access to legally. And but if they do start banning things, I will start swapping the feed on the website to the BitChute feed, which is a nice 1080p version of everything. So anyway, I appreciate all you guys viewing the channel. To all the newcomers, welcome, welcome. Just know it's a variety show. It's going to have exactly what you want sometimes, and other times I'm going to be posting stuff that'll make you wonder why you're here. So just hang on. A video will come in that you love, trust me. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.